Hi and welcome to the CDC Understanding Impact podcast. CDC is the UK's development finance institution and impact investor. And in this podcast series, we explore how investment in the private sector can help overcome some of the biggest challenges facing developing and emerging economies. Now, earlier this week, we launched our new five-year strategy here at CDC. The strategy aims to build on the mandate that's been at the heart of our work for nearly 75 years, while setting a new ambition for scale and innovation. It'll also see us change our name in April next year from CDC to British International Investment. So in this podcast episode, we take a deep dive into the new strategy and get a closer understanding of the three objectives at the centre of it: to invest in productive, sustainable, and inclusive development. Over the course of the episode, we'll discuss what all of this means in practice, how the strategy will be implemented in the countries where we invest, and what we have learnt in the 5 years since we launched our previous strategy. All of the clips in this episode were recorded at an event we held to launch the strategy on the 14th of December 2021, and that event was hosted by CDC's Director of Communications, Lindsay Taff, who is the first voice you'll hear.
I'm joined by Matt Robinson, who's our head of corporate strategy, who's been spearheading the project over the last 18 months to 2 years, and three colleagues from across the business who can give their perspective on how the impact objectives will play out in their areas. So I have Abhinav Sinha, who's our head of technology and telecoms, Yasmin Lamy, who's our deputy CIO and head of capital allocation and capital strategy, and Holger Rosenbusch, who leads our infrastructure and climate group. Welcome, everyone. So if I can start with you, Matt, just want to start off with the thinking behind the overall strategy. How did the lessons and the experiences of the last 5 years get us to this point?
Thanks, Lindsay. Hi, everyone. We're really lucky to get a lot of input and scrutiny from people right across our markets, our investees, of course, governments in Africa and Asia, and other stakeholders, civil society organizations, scrutiny bodies, UK parliamentarians, and of course our shareholder. And we talk to them all very regularly. But distilling, really, I think the things they wanted us and that we felt ourselves we should take from the last 5 years into the next 5 years, there were really three things that came out of it. First, make sure that we set some very clear goals for ourselves and make sure that those goals are really relevant to countries that want to get ahead in the future modern global economy. Now, we think those three goals, which we're talking about today, productive, sustainable, and inclusive, do that and are clear, and most importantly, are relevant to the future of the places where we invest. The second sort of lesson was, you know, we should be very clear ourselves about how we're going to achieve those. We're always asking our investees, what's your route to market? And the question really is back to ourselves, what's ours? So routes to our own market, very important. Final thing is, what's our measures of success? We might talk about this later. We'll have a very clear impact goal for our company that's denoted by a new impact score. And of course, we will financially try to remain sustainable on a multi-year basis. So clarity of goal, clarity of how we'll get there, and clarity about how we'll measure success.
Great, thank you. If I can move to you, Abhinav. Productivity is something that we've been talking about quite a bit, and particularly around the real focus that we're going to have on digital transformation. And that's an area you've been spearheading for us for the last few years. Could you tell us a little bit more about how the strategy is going to influence our plans?
Well, thanks, Lindsay. Look, I think, and hi, everyone. Productivity has, in the classical economic sense, you always think of it as either providing better physical, goods, so mechanization or better infrastructure, or you improve the skills of the workforce, or you use technology. So it's always been part of our thinking. But I think what we found with technology and digital transformation is that there are three or four really incredible attributes to it, which talk towards productivity improvement. So first, it's very cost efficient. So instead of just replicating infrastructure again and again, you can do it in a much more cost-efficient way when you deliver those outcomes using technology. It's also very replicable and very scalable. So what we found is what works in, let's say, Egypt works then in Nigeria, works in Pakistan or India. And these are productivity enhancers in a non-linear manner. So, you know, that's something which also talks to cost efficiency in a way. And look, what we see with digital transformation is that in a way it kickstarts the whole entrepreneurial flywheel in many farm markets. So you find entrepreneurs setting up businesses, they create jobs, they lead to better adoption of the same sorts of technologies. So it's a positive spiral, which then enhances productivity. Look, we will be very focused on using digital transformation, using technologies to drive productive growth in our next strategy period.
And I'm right in understanding that you're looking at this across lots of different levels, so from digital infrastructure right the way through to how individual companies will use digital to transform the way they operate.
No, that's right, Lindsay. So we think of it as a digital stack. And so at the base of the stack, think of it as digital infrastructure companies. So companies which provide connectivity, whether it's in terms of fiber or mobile networks or towers and so on. We think of that as the base of what we do. The next part of the stack is digitally enabled companies. So these are the companies which will use these sorts of infrastructure to then provide services, right? Or connect different markets to suppliers of goods or services, or connect pools of talent to these markets. And then finally, at the top of the stack, we think of disruptive businesses. So for instance, we backed a company which uses artificial intelligence to predict or diagnose for breast cancer. And we will continue backing all these three sorts of companies, so across the stack. And we're very fortunate in that we have a flexible pool of capital. So we can also back very nascent companies with high-risk capital that we have in the form of Kinetic or Catalyst Capital, where we take more of a risk.
Oh, that brings me neatly onto Yasmin, who has been leading our Catalyst strategies over the last few years. And inclusion's often been a real theme of what we talk about when we talk about Catalyst. It's about how we can be more inclusive in how we get our capital out there, but also in terms of looking at more inclusive services and directing our money out. How is that working on the diversity front? How are you seeing that working on things like gender finance for the next 5 years?
Yeah, I mean, I might actually start by saying, I think for us, inclusion is really a broader thing than just diversity and inclusion. It is really about access to affordable and high quality products and services as well. So whether it's about gender or racial equity or being in a rural area where access is low to a critical product like energy, you know, when we talk about inclusion, I think we span all of those kind of considerations. And so if we think about the specific sector of energy, you know, in Africa, so you have 600 million people lacking access to energy, to electricity. And so one of the things that I think we've really felt proud of is the portfolio of investments that support access to off-grid energy, which happens to be a Catalyst portfolio. And through that portfolio, we've backed companies that offer solar home systems to small households through companies like Greenlight Planet, which is now reaching over 11 million people with clean energy products in Kenya, Tanzania, Uganda, and Nigeria. 80% of those households are rural. So that is a really exciting inclusion story. And we want to make sure that stays in the picture and is captured when we talk about inclusion. So having said that, I think we also, of course, look at diversity and inclusion from a gender lens and from a racial lens too. We have been looking at the portfolio where we can apply our 2X criteria, which is how we kind of classify our gender lens investing. We have set an ambition that 25% of all of our new commitments should reach that threshold in the new strategy period, and also made a commitment to supporting more Black-led businesses in the years ahead too.
Great, thank you. Holger, given that we have in the past been more focused on poverty reduction and inclusion in that sense, why is action on climate change so core now to CDC's mission?
Thanks, Lindsay, and good morning, everybody. Well, I think it's obvious that very sadly, many of the countries that CDC is invested in, certainly in Africa, are at the very much the receiving end of the negative fallout of climate change. So they are contributing very little to the problem as such, but they're very much exposed to negative events like droughts and floods and storms and such things, which makes it very difficult for these countries to continue on their path of economic development. Hence, one of the very strong focuses that we have as part of our climate strategy is, as was mentioned earlier, on adaptation and resilience. So to support our partner countries in their way to be more responsive to the fallout of the negative impact of climate change. And that very much sort of entails us supporting what I would refer to a vertical transition model, where the economies need to transition from a carbon-based economy towards an environmentally and climate-friendly model. And we are then avoiding, supporting technologies that would create a lock-in situation for these countries, whilst we are supporting, for example, renewable energy, which will help these countries to continue to grow on a sustainable pathway. But we are also looking at ensuring that negative fallout of climate change in specific communities, which are very much affected by the action that is taken in order to protect the climate, like, for example, in South Africa or in India, where coal-based power, power is a very significant component of the local energy mix, and coal mines and related communities are quite significant. So taking the learnings from what we had coming out of Europe, we need to make sure, and we are actually working in both these countries in providing support on TA and some fact finding into designing business models that ultimately will allow those communities to be benefiting from upskilling and from alternative employment opportunities, to not being left behind in the wake of this transition that all these economies need to be going through, rather than that they will be benefiting equally from the economic opportunities that will be created. And there's a very strong sort of overlap then between our climate focus as well as the inclusion thesis that we just talked about earlier.
So to understand what this all means in the context of the countries where we invest, I wanted to share some of the conversation Lindsay had with Tembite Ermias and Srini Nagarajan. Tembite and Srini lead our teams in Africa and Asia, respectively.
I'd like to start off by asking each of you, what lessons did you learn from the last strategy period, and how have those helped to inform our thinking about this strategy period?
So I think there were several lessons that we learned through the last strategy period. And I would say there are at least three of them that translate into our next strategy period. The first one is the need for bespoke solutions in our markets. And I think that means that both the approach to individual countries being different, and then also the capital needs and the capital tools that need to be applied being different. That's one. The other thing I think we learned was that partnerships are a way for us to actually catalyze change. In other words, it helps us extend our impact. It helps reduce risks. Those could be operational risks or financial risks. And it's a very powerful way for us to ensure that our footprint it continues to grow on the continent in Africa. And then the third thing I'd say is that local presence and the importance of that. Over the last 5 years, we've built up our teams, both in Africa and in Asia, significantly. And I think that has shown that for our investments themselves and their performance, as well as for our stakeholders, this is of value. Those are the three things I'd say are the things we learned over the last 5 years.
And could you expand a little on this differentiated approach in terms of how it might impact what we do in the next 5 years?
Sure. So, if I take Africa as an example, it's a collection of 54 different countries, each of them with different characteristics. We have a set of countries that are relatively advanced, the biggest one being South Africa in terms of the development of its capital markets. We have other countries which are large in population, have development needs as well, and have reasonably stable investment environments. And then we have countries which are on their way. They're relatively small, but they're growing, and they're interesting from an investment perspective and friendly to private investment. And then we have a core set of countries that we call fragile countries, which have very specific needs in terms of helping build up the ecosystem. So what we've done is in this next strategy period, we've identified those four different segments and called them mature countries, as in South Africa, powerhouse countries, as in Nigeria, for an example, and stable countries, you know, a range of countries, including Cote d'Ivoire and others, and fragile countries, which includes 22 other countries in Africa. And I think that segmented approach allows us to deploy our capital and our tools differently in those countries to address the needs.
And Srini, how has it impacted in Asia in terms of the lessons and how you see those affecting how we'll operate over the next 5 years?
Asia is a bit of a mixed bag. We have mature markets like Tinbite said, and some of them have been fragile, like Myanmar, Afghanistan, and the external debt and FX crisis in Sri Lanka. If you look at the biggest learnings we have had, I think as a counter-cyclical investor, it's important to time the market when your capital is most additive. And that's probably one of our biggest learnings. COVID-19, when there was a liquidity crunch, our capital was extremely additive. I think that's probably one of our biggest learnings. Digitization is irreversible from what it appears to me. It helps a lot in terms of reducing the cost of services and improving the realizations of producers. And that's been a biggest learning for us in terms of the way technology is impacting the lives of people. And the adaptation of people to technology has been extraordinary. Third one I would say is that the renewable market, the scale at which our markets have achieved with a very transparent auction mechanism has been astounding, really. I mean, it's been amazing. The one thing I wanted to say is that definitely there is ability for CDC's capital to be much more catalytic in our market, and its ability to attract third-party capital, keeping City of London in mind as well, really. And can I say one thing that I want to say that in our markets, it's not just the smartest and the strongest people that will survive, but the most adaptable, like Darwin says, really. And a key element in this entire ingredient is about judgment, about who you back, and not just, it's about ability to build a relationship and not falling into the power of crowd and momentum, which makes CDC capital more distinguished. That's what I would say is our biggest learning. In terms of our next strategy, I would say we are pushing the boundaries on development impact, keeping our very purpose in mind, and our capital, so that our capital is most additive. Today, we live in a world where ESG is getting more or less commoditized. When we look back 20 years back, when we introduced the concept of ESG, that was pretty new to corporates. So the new strategy coming into force, the PSI framework, will ensure that our capital is used in the best possible way to meet these opportunities and challenges. And climate emergency is evident in our country, and we will put climate finance, technology investing, and inclusive finance at the heart of our mission, really. And final point is South Asia will also have to play an enhanced role on gender, given that we are starting from a relatively lower base.
And that's pretty much it for this episode. Hopefully it's provided you with a clearer understanding on our strategic direction in the next 5 years. And if you want to dig deeper into any of this, then there are some links in the episode notes. Here you can find the full recording of the event, as well as a link to the strategy itself and some supporting documents too. Thank you very much for listening to this podcast. We'll be back with a new episode in the new year.